Today is February 7th, 2005. Our agenda today is a discussion of the IMST operations. Do you have any opening observations or comments or things that we need to know before we get started, Sandy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a footnote. Committee members, you'll see at the dais copy of the IMST statute that, as Brendan makes reference, we'll have that in front of us. And also, there was a request on Friday of natural resource acronyms. You will see that on the back side of that for everybody's referencing, so that as acronyms are used, all of our members will know exactly what they mean. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Oh, and we have a field trip on Wednesday.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I might ask Sandy, with regards to the field trip, when are the particulars going to be delivered?
Tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Is that too late?
I don't know. I don't think so. We're leaving at noon and returning at...
Mr. Chair, committee members, we're hoping that the tour is only going to be about an hour. So if we can get down there by about 1:15, 1:30, we should be back on the road back up here. I'm thinking that barring, you know, Portland traffic back, we could be back as soon as 3:30.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Brendan, thank you. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brendan McCarthy with the Legislative Council's office. Thank you for inviting me to talk today. Today I'd like to run through a little bit of the history behind the IMST and then go through a quick encapsulation of the statute itself, which talks about the IMST. First off, some of these, I did not make copies for the committee, and for that I apologize. I have some documents which come from the sort of the origination of the Oregon Coastal Salmon Restoration Initiative. There were many, many three-ring binders involved and all sorts of documents, executive summaries and that kind of thing. So I'm going to read from some of them, and I'll provide them to staff after the committee so that they can be copied for you. First off, there's a piece from the executive summary of the initiative itself that talks about the what came to be called the Oregon Plan, and it says that the plan includes an explicit process to evaluate progress, resolve institutional barriers, and make future changes to the manner in which the plan is implemented. It envisioned doing that.
Excuse me. Representative Witt, would you like to join us at the, up here, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry, Brendan.
That's okay. It envisioned doing that through the creation of an independent science team, which became known as what is now known as the IMST. And the same document says, an independent scientific assessment team will be established. This team will interact with the implementation team on a routine, ongoing basis to evaluate the effectiveness of the plan, make recommendations for change, and provide an external evaluation of progress. And that's, some of those words are fairly important as we move along in the discussion here, would be routine, ongoing basis, and to be able to make recommendations for change. And finally, to be that external, that independent agency or team or group, whatever you want to call it. The next document came from the legislative review draft of the Oregon Plan itself, and it uses similar language. It talks about the independent science team. It says an independent team of 4 or 5 scientific experts will be established to help the Oregon Plan partners base restoration efforts on the most sound science available. We'll provide an independent audit each year on the strengths and weaknesses of the Oregon Plan. They'll focus particularly on the adaptive process of compiling new information and results into a review of goals, objectives, strategies, and approaches. NIMS apparently, it's the National Marine Fisheries Service, apparently raised accountability as a very important aspect of the Oregon Plan. They were unwilling to look at the plan as a legitimate recovery tool unless there was some sort of strong accountability attached to it. And the view was that the science team would help agencies be accountable for their actions. The last piece that I'm going to read from is fairly long and actually goes into detail on what the reasons for the independent team. And that also is from the conservation plan itself from 1997. It talks about how there are within state government many institutional barriers to implementing something like the Oregon Plan. It talks about how many of the impediments are reduced through the Oregon Plan, but it quotes, in addition to reducing institutional barriers, the independent audit from the science team will ensure a high level of accountability for Oregon Plan implementation. It will ensure more effective use of adaptive management. The annual audit report will, among other things, synthesize new information emerging from the program and recommend changes, a critical step in the adaptive management process. Monitoring and evaluation have been a major weak point in salmon restoration programs. The commitment to monitoring shown to date by the Oregon Plan and the implementation of the monitoring team are a significant improvement over past plans, but establishing an independent review and assessment of the monitoring program will help to ensure continued support. So again, we're looking at something that was implemented to provide that external independent review and to ensure continued accountability of the agencies. And I think I'll move on to just briefly discussing how the statute came into being. There were three versions of Senate Bill 924. It got to a B engrossed version. The original version of Senate Bill 924 just talked about a team of five scientists, and its duties were to review projects for which funding is requested from GWEB, which sort of became OWEB, to review implementation of the Oregon Plan, to prepare reports to the Governor and Legislative Assembly on the implementation of the plan, to serve as a scientific peer review panel to state agencies. And most of those duties were carried forward to the final version, which was the B engrossed version, which modified them a little bit. It says the IMST shall contain seven members, up to seven members, and it will review implementation of the Oregon Plan and other programs for achieving healthy streams, prepare and submit to the Governor, the Legislative Assembly, and the public an annual report on the Oregon Plan, including any recommendations for changes, serve as an independent scientific review panel, and report regularly to the Joint Legislative Committee on Salmon, or the SR Squared Committee, the Salmon and Stream Enhancement Committee. And that was what got codified. Excuse me just for a second. So we have the statute, and let's parse that just a little bit. It got codified at 541-409. The last sentence of subsection 1 says, the team shall be governed by generally accepted guidelines and practices governing the activities of independent science boards, such as the National Academy of Sciences. It's interesting, when I was running through the legislative history, I didn't see any reason why that particular science board was chosen. Some of the historical documents show actually that they were looking toward independent boards with the Northwest Power Planning Council as a model. But somehow, and I'm not exactly sure where it came from, but they chose that language instead. I think that the I'm not sure that there's a significant distinction. I don't know what they were looking for in one board and then found in another board, but there was obviously a choice made to pick the National Academy of Sciences, and maybe somebody else in the audience who's going to be talking can distinguish why perhaps it was landed upon that model. And perhaps there's something important in this discussion that should be raised from that difference. I know that it has been an issue for members of the IMST to be going out on their own and choosing certain studies or certain things to review. I think that is encompassed within their role. They do not have to act at the bequest of a particular party. If you look again at the historic documents, we're looking at a team that was established to really go out and look and see whether the implementation of the plan was happening, to review and assess success or failure, to look at what agencies were doing, to see whether they were the things that they were doing are effective or not. And that strikes me as being a very independent role and a very proactive role. And I think that that falls within subsection 2A when they say review implementation of the Oregon plan. I don't think there's any way that they can review implementation of the Oregon plan without actually finding out whether it's working or not. After doing that review, then, of course, they're going to be preparing and submitting a report to the governor. So, again, we have a body that needs to, you know, develop a set of data to report on the Oregon plan implementation. And beyond that, I don't have much to say. If there are any specific questions that you wanted me to get into, I would be happy to do so.
Members of the committee have any? Representative Kummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brendan, while you've been talking, I've been sort of looking over the 541.409 that you were referring to. And in subsection 3, I'm struck with what appears to be a real, what I would consider to be a lot of authority for the for this team, independent multidisciplinary science team, to have, but they can't do anything with it. Am I reading that right? I mean, because it says that they're going to, before you answer, it says that they're going to, if they make a suggestion to an agency, that the agency has to respond in writing and explain how the agency intends to implement or not implement the suggestion that's been made. And then the team just has to report that to the Joint Legislative Committee that that's created for hearing it. But they can't really appear to do anything about it if the agency says, no, we don't want to do it, or... And then I guess the other thing is that if an agency is not going to do it, Mr. Chair, are they supposed to do it for cause? And if it's for cause, can it be because they don't want to?
Chair Jensen, Representative Kummel, I think you've hit upon the delicate balance that the Oregon Plan was trying to achieve. The historical context, of course, was the... declining numbers of salmonids and the threat of the listing of salmon on the federal endangered species list. The attempt by the state here was to create a plan for the recovery of those salmon and at the same time attempt to buy some leeway from the federal government in saying that, you know, this was a good idea and to forestall potentially a listing of the salmon. In doing so, what was, I think, one of the goals of the IMST here was to ensure that there was reporting back and at least some indication of, you know, some sort of discussion between an agency and the IMST and saying, you know, here are some scientists, they've come up with what you really, what they consider you really should do, agency, please go forth and do it. However, if you're not going to do it, we want to know why you're not going to do it, and then what happens then is through the report that the IMST submits to the legislature and to the governor, there would be some political pressure brought to bear on the agency for perhaps not accomplishing the objectives under the plan. So you've definitely hit upon a what I'm sure, and I wasn't legislative counsel in this area in 1997, but I did participate in discussions later. You've hit upon, I think, what was a big sticking point, and I think this was an attempt to delicately resolve that sticking point.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
And you may or may not be able or willing to answer this question. Has the IMS key, and I also recognize that this may, you know, seem just to be absolute sacrilege in Oregon, but has the IMS key run its useful life? In other words, is its useful life basically over, and is there a reason to continue it?
With all due respect to the learned counsel that we have, I think that question probably is not a question to counsel, but would be more a question to for this committee to deal with. And to look at. I certainly don't object to Brendan responding to it, but that strikes me. It's whether it has or hasn't served a useful life is our responsibility, not LC's responsibility.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
I guess I would just only point out that at some point in time it was considered to be an integral part of the plan. And
I think if I can, and I think that point's well worth exploring right now, if you excuse me, all of you, a little bit. We've got an issue coming up on the potential delisting of the coastal coho. The IMST is going to have to file along with the Fish and Wildlife Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife's proposal to the federal government, the IMST's professional opinion of the science that the department has used to reach this point of requesting. If we pull the IMST out of this, and Jim may speak to this a little bit when he comes up too, Mr. Myron, but if we pull the IMST out of this, I think our probability of success in ever delisting under the Oregon plan any species would be something approaching zero. Because they are being looked to as qualified scientists making an evaluation on the projects that have been done there, on the numbers that are there, and the process that we've gone through and plan to continue to go through to, stay with those numbers. Is that reasonably fair, Mr. Myron? I'll let you talk to that when you come up if you'd like to. So and in light of the fact that that's only one of how many endangered species do we have and salmonid species do we have, we'll be dealing with that same issue. Somebody is going to, within the Oregon team, going to have to be passing a judgment on the science of what we are requesting of the federal government to consider to delist. So my quick and easy response to that, understanding the legitimacy of your question, I appreciate very much your question, is that it probably has not, and probably as long as we have the endangered species in front of us, until there is significant modification in the laws or change in the laws that deal with that, if we don't want to become, excuse me, wards of the federal government, we probably need this type of thing.
Thank you for that clarification.
Does that help a little bit on that? Thank you.
It does bring up another question, though, Mr. Chair.
That's great.
If I may, and this is really more posed to you and maybe to Mr. Myron when he comes up, is should the IMST, conversely to what I was just asking, should the IMST be strengthened from a standpoint of when they make a suggestion to an agency that the agency needs to, when the agency responds that they're not going to implement, that they really have to have a real reason or that they really have to have cause? Or is that just sort of an unwritten rule and
thank you.
We don't need to put it
on? This is an excellent question, Representative, and one that we were in part alluding to in the last meeting when we were talking with OWEB and the fact that their report was late getting to us.
Right.
You will observe that the team shall include any agency's response in its report to the Joint Legislative Committee created pursuant to, etc., type of thing. The intention, then, of the Oregon plan, excuse me, I think in this is that the executive department, of course, and the legislature, and in this case we're talking about the legislature, will receive this report, and in some cases it may be that the report will say there's statutory, we will conclude there's statutory changes that are needed in order for the agency to be able to do that. In some cases, we may kick it downstairs to our brethren in that room that dishes out the money and say they haven't dished out enough money to be able to do this. And in some cases, it may be an agency that hasn't been doing the job that it's supposed to be doing, and then we as, you know, the oversight committee will go kicking and screaming into the governor's office asking for help, his help. Or her help in getting the agency and, you know, to do those things that are being suggested. So I think it would, I have described the IMST at times as the proverbial middle management. You know, a group that's got a lot of responsibility and no authority. And I think in terms of the charge that they have, that is also part of the charge they have with the, you know, being able to maintain this degree of independence that has been talked a little bit about. Mm-hmm. If we bestow upon them the power to get another agency to conform, I'm not sure that we haven't taken away from that kind of basic charge. You know, they give us the information. They give the agency the information. Correct me if I'm wrong, Brendan, on this first, in the review of what the agency's been doing. And the agency may respond to that and correct it. Or the agency may write back and say, you know, cause. Or they may write back and say, because we don't have money, or whatever the reason may be. And at that point, then, the IMST feeds us this information. And the ball is in our court. And it's up to us, the rest of government, to take over from there. Is that...
Mr. Chair, I think that's a reasonable interpretation. You do not have a copy of the statute that describes the Oregon Plan itself, 541-405, but, you know, that does feed in with what that language says as well, which is the Oregon Plan is a comprehensive program for the protection and recovery of species and for restoration of watersheds throughout the state. It combines the regulatory and other actions of state and federal agencies and local governments with voluntary watershed restoration by private landowners and others. And it includes, but is not limited to, the scientific review by the IMST and others of the activities performed under the plan. But I think, again, you sort of get back to the comment I made before, which is that there is this sort of careful balance attempting to be achieved, which is that there is some regulatory aspect that state agencies already have in their responsibilities before the Oregon Plan was adopted. Those were sort of rolled into the Oregon Plan. And then there's this voluntary aspect of it, that we're looking for voluntary help from citizens. And we're sort of trying to get the IMST to determine, is it all working? And, you know, I think that's the role they're playing. Is it working? Go out and do these studies, do the evaluation, do the monitoring, come back and tell the state agencies who have regulatory responsibility, and tell the watershed councils and other local individuals who have a voluntary, not responsibility, but are doing things voluntarily under the plan, it's working or it isn't working. And
did I get another question afterwards?
No. Nope, I'm all done. That answers my questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging me.
If I could, Brendan, let me go back to your question mark on the National Academy of Science.
Yes, sir.
Choice of selection, I think for that. With the exception of some of the folks in the audience, I'm, I think, the only person up here that was around at the time this thing was being done. And while I never have professed photographic memory, it does strike me that that's probably the most prestigious science group that we have in the world, or at least in this country. The idea was to set the sights high, I think, to a standard that in and of itself is above reproach by most of us, at any rate. I think that was the intention, I think, and the reason for going to the National Academy of Science as the group, and certainly a number of others were discussed, and certainly some other things could have been included there. But if we included them, I think thought that we had pretty much covered the issue. And since there were two or three other people involved in this, they might have a different opinion than I do. But that's my recall of where it was at. Are there other questions for Brendan then? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I know we've taken valuable time away from your time in the office, where
Right. We
keep asking you to do more and more things.
Sorry.
So we'll proceed on and let you, unless you don't trust us.
No.
You're certainly welcome to stay.
I'll be listening in. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Myron. With the governor's office, who was one of those other people that was certainly here at the time we were discussing the Oregon Plan, the creation of the IMST, and all of the other various and sundry parts. So, Mr. Myron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jim Myron of the governor's Natural Resources Office, and as the chair mentioned, and in the interest of full disclosure, I was a lobbyist for Oregon trout in 1997 when this legislation passed, and did have some role in
most of us have tried to forgive you for that. It's okay.
I'm still working for your forgiveness. as you can see from the statute, the direction to the IMST is pretty general and pretty broad, and basically just says, review the Oregon Plan and its implementation, report annually to the legislature, provide independent science peer review to state agencies. Pretty general. One thing that the statute does specify, though, and it's in the title of the team itself,
multidisciplinary.
There is a list of the scientific expertise that the team needs to have within its seven members. So That is an important component of the team's work as well, to have that various expertise, because as various projects come before them, different individuals on the team are given the lead based upon that expertise on the projects that they are operating. Another interesting point that I think the statute points to is the independence of the team. You notice that nowhere in the statute does it say anything about how the team should operate. And that was purposeful. The only reference is to the National Science Body that the chairman was mentioning. It was left up to the team itself to create their own charter, which they have done. And you may be hearing from some of the people that follow me about some of the concerns they had about the specific language in the charter. And I think the team has taken that criticism to heart and has considered some of the things that have been said, and I think that charter has been revised somewhat as a result of that. But from where I sit now and where I was previously, the idea that the state agencies needed to have an independent science body that could, give them suggestions and recommendations on questions of science is a very valid one and a very important one. Regarding some of the questions that Representative Crummell had, the language in there that requires agencies to have this back and forth between the agencies and the team, I think that was another purposeful act to set up just a little bit of, I wouldn't say, it might be healthy tension, but just a process of communicating back and forth. It's not that the team has any authority over state agencies, and at times the agencies have said in some of the recommendations that have been made that we don't have the statutory authority to do this. So, that's a valid response to a recommendation. Another valid response is we'd love to do this, but we don't have the funding or the staff to carry it out. That's another valid response. But in a lot of cases, agencies have said, this is a really good idea. We hadn't considered it whatever. So it's been a good back and forth over the years as part of that process. As you may or may not know, the governor's recommended budget proposes an increase for the independent science team. When it was originated, we were contracting for these people's time at a third of their time. So each member of the team was obligated for a third of his or her time on this process. As budgets kept shrinking and the one year with the several special sessions, the budget of the IMST was cut, and right now people are being contracted for a fourth of their time rather than a third of their time. And it's put a bit of a strain on some of the projects. It's delayed some of the completion of some of the projects. So what the governor's recommended budget does is bring that up back up to where it was so that people could be funded for a third of their time. The chair mentioned the coastal coho assessment. Let me just briefly talk about what that is and what we've asked the IMST to do in that regard. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has assessed the status of North Coast coho salmon as part of the National Marine Fisheries Service review of that species. We have concluded in that status assessment, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has concluded that species has rebounded substantially in recent years. It went from a low of about 29,000 fish coast-wide up to around 200,000 wild fish in the last couple of years. So what this assessment says is while we still have some issues and some potential problems, we think that species is viable. And it's not that we're trying to tell the federal government what to do in their status decision or in their listing decision that's due in June, but we wanted them to have the most up-to-date information that they could have in order to make that decision. Regardless of how that decision comes out, the state of Oregon plans to continue to work toward the recovery of those fish. We will be writing a recovery plan under the terms of the Department of Fish and Wildlife's Native Fish Conservation Plan, regardless of whether there's a federal listing or not. So, anyway, that's the science piece that we have asked the IMST to review the methodology and the conclusions on. And when they produce that response back to us, we will incorporate that into our final package of information that we send to the federal government in late March or early April sometime.
Could I interrupt? Maybe you're going to do this, Jim, but could I interrupt for the committee's knowledge? This whole process that Department of Fish and Wildlife has gone through and is going through really kind of originated with the definition of recovery that passed out of this body, as you recall, in the last session. That provided them the framework from which to work to build up their model, if you wish, and to look at and to use them as the criteria for their conclusion that recovery has taken place. Are they still? Is there still a need to watch over them? Certainly, but the idea that the run is viable, I guess, at this point. So y'all have played something of a part in getting it to where it is, at least right now. And then I think in the interim, the director of the Fish and Wildlife gave some marching orders there that put that as a very high priority, and probably that came from the governor's office as well, and that sort of thing. So I'm sorry, Tim.
No, that's fine. I appreciate that additional explanation. And with this, because of the independence of the team, they could have declined to review the information that we sent to them, because we put it on a pretty short timeline, and they usually take a little bit longer than that to deliberate. But they said, we'll take it on, and we'll do the best job that we can in the short period of time that we have. So, and they have taken on projects from recommended to them by others as well. It's not just a closed process, not closed just to state agencies or the legislature or the executive branch. So they have a list of proposed projects that that if they ever have the time to get to, they want to do. But it is their choice to decide which projects they undertake. So.
Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Jim. I had a question regarding that, and I know we had a lot of discussions this past summer during the interim with the IMST, but I'm having a hard time recalling right now how the work plan for the IMST is set, and you know, possibly we'll have somebody from the IMST come up, but you were just talking about the list. They get recommendations from, what, the agencies or the governor's office. Do they set a work plan every year, and is there a list of projects that we know that they're going to review, or how do they set priorities for which projects? Because we're probably going to have multiple projects related to the Oregon plan that could use review. So is that something the governor's office helps with? Maybe you can illuminate for the committee how that work plan process works.
Okay, I'll be happy to explain from my perspective how they go about doing that, Mr. Chair and Representative Dingfelder.
Excuse me. We have Jeanette Holman with us, and if we run into further questions on the drafting of this Oregon plan,
she's there. It's
or
her fault.
Any of the expertise, probably more expertise in the room now than we're capable of handling, so we'll but we're really please, Jeanette, I thank you for coming up. She is the lady. And believe me, serving on the committee that was doing this, she just did an outstanding and remarkable job. You know, at 11 o'clock at night, somebody give her a redraft of an entire bill, and 40 pages later was due for a committee meeting the next morning at 8:30 or whatever time we met. So, and it was always there. So I appreciate your taking time to come. We're reviewing the IMST, and there may be some questions that you can answer for us that we otherwise would not have been able to get answers to.
Mr. Chair, that's probably why she no longer works at LC and is now with the Division of State Lands.
It is interesting that there is a parallel between when she finished writing this legislation and when she chose to move on to some other position in state government here. So you very well could be correct, Representative Felder. Please, Jim, sorry to have interrupted you.
That's fine. The team does create an annual work plan, and I think, if my memory serves me correctly, they do publish that. I don't know if it's part of the annual report that they make to the legislature or whether it's on their website, but they do publish a work plan. Some of the projects in the work plan are ongoing plans, ongoing projects that take more than a year to complete. Others are ones that are of shorter-term nature, and of course they've always got things like this COHO assessment that come up without their knowledge and that they have to respond to one way or the other.
I think they respond, don't they, too, on the basis of need on like the COHO issue. Time was of the essence in this, or is of the essence in this, and there are some other reports, the activities that a few months may not make as much difference with on, so it's a need basis in part on how they respond to those things.
I believe that's correct, Mr. Chair. So I you know, maybe you could ask somebody from the team for more specifics on that.
Yeah, I will do that. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
That's all I have other than to answer any more questions that people may have.
No questions? Okay, thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Jeanette, with your indulgence, and I sure do appreciate your coming over, would ask you to, we're looking at the IMST today. We've had some concerns, and I suspect there's seldom any secrets around this building, so you probably have heard many of the concerns. One of the ways that we have of trying to deal with those concerns is get things out on the table, and we've been looking a little bit at the statute itself and the background on the IMST. One question came up regarding the choice of the National Academy of Sciences as a reference for independent science boards. My recall was that this was chosen because of the status that the National Academy of Sciences have. There were a number of discussions about at the time. Do you have any memory on that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jeanette Holman. I'm currently employee at the Department of State Lands, but when this legislation was originally drafted, I was a senior deputy drafter at Legislative Council. In answer to your question, I would agree that it was the status of the National Academy of Sciences and their pretty intensive peer review process that they go through that was one of the reasons that we called them out. We had also looked at some of the other review panels that were going on at the time. The National Marine Fisheries Service had a review panel process, but none of those seemed as hands-off as the process that the National Academy went through. And, Mr. Chair, as you recall, one of the primary things we were striving to get with the independent multidisciplinary science team was that independence and a hands-off from, you know, the governor, the legislature, and other interested parties, and to keep it as free of those any kinds of influences that there could possibly be, as well as making sure that the science was very, very sound. And I think that's why we called out that the academy. That's my recollection.
Okay. Do you want to, in case my check out my answer with Jeanette on the questions you had, Gary, Representative Carmel?
No, I think I'm satisfied.
You're,
at this point.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Do any of you have any questions from what we've heard today, and or any other things that you might ask of Jeanette? That because believe me, she is the source. That's much easier than I thought it
would. Well, this is great. Thank you so much for thinking of me. It's always nice to come back.
You thought this thing had disappeared, gone away, and you'd never have to be bothered with it again, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I hope not.
Mr. Chair, I actually do have a question, and Jeanette may or may not. You knew it was not going to be that easy.
I knew you wouldn't get off. Yes.
Jeanette, and I don't know how familiar you are with the SAM Recovery Funding Board in Washington, and I've worked quite a bit with them. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that they have a similar type of independent science team. Do you recall if it's analogous to what we have for the IMST? Or I'm curious if this was unique to Oregon. Are there other states, you know, Washington and Alaska, California are facing, you know, similar challenges to what we have with salmon recovery. And I'm just curious if this was modeled, if this was unique to Oregon, it was modeled after other states, or if you know if other states have included this in legislation.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, my recollection of the Washington Salmon Recovery Board is that it came after our Oregon plan, that this was in place before they formally created their plan and agency. I don't recall that it was.
So as a follow-up, at this point you're not, and maybe that's something we can look into. I'm curious if there are independent science teams. I mean, we have obviously at the federal level, but I'm curious if other states, I would think Alaska, Idaho, you know, any of the states that are facing similar challenges, and to find out and look at their enabling legislation would be, I think, of interest for this committee.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, there weren't at the time that I recall any other states with similar provisions, but there may well have been since then, and there may have been some that I wasn't aware of.
Okay. Thank you.
Jeanette, were we not on the cutting edge of this in the state of Oregon?
That was the way it felt to me at the time.
Yes, I'm sorry, poor choice of words on my part. were we not the really the first state to step in to try to do this type of thing? I mean, we get the warnings on the coast. It goes back to what, 93 approximately, where this issue begins to build, and we have the creation of then the governor's watershed enhancement board and some policies that come out of that, and then that led to as the threats became more ominous, it led us to more action than we'd had, and ultimately to the creation of the Oregon Plan, with the intention that
the more we could keep the federal government out of our backyard, the better off we were going to be at that time.
Mr. Chair, I think that summarizes it pretty well. We definitely started it back in 1993 when we were...
So we didn't have a lot of places to go for other models as far as this type of an issue, as far as this issue was concerned.
That's correct.
Okay.
I'd just like to note that the Watershed Health Plan, their program, I think was the first, right, in 1993 in the Grand Ronde in the South Coast.
And, yes.
And that was pre-Measure 66 money. So was that federal funds or was that state money? Or actually, Greg,
I think it was
know.
State money to start with.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was back in the good old days. Okay. Thank you, Jeanette, again, for your... taking time out of your schedule. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. Anytime.
Okay. One of the other issues that has come up, if you'd like to stay, please. I may be wrong on this, but that I'd like to clarify before we go to other things. Is compensation. Compensation for the IMST is provided for in the statute, as those of you have read it. And in the historical past, we have had a surplus, an abundance. What's the right word? We've had a lot of people from Oregon State University, Department of Sciences, on the IMST. Part of that, of course, is very natural because, just a few miles away from us is a body of scientists that are certainly comparable, in a department to any in the country. And it's therefore somewhat natural for us to probably look to Oregon State, for this. At any rate, compensation for the members, is provided for and created pursuant to ORS, I guess, 171-551. But I'd like to have Sandy kind of run through what that currently looks like. I know she's done some things and prepared some information for me. There are a couple of questions. One, are the members from the Oregon State University what we call double dipping? Are they getting paid from Oregon State and from OWEB, who is the agency in question that's responsible as far as the dollars are concerned. So could you clarify that for us, Cindy? I know you've got it right there.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. The way the funding for the IMST works, to the best of my knowledge, and I've double-checked this with several sources, OWEB is the fiduciary agent. They do not pay the bills. Generally what happens is OSU pays and then sends their documentation back to OWEB, and I believe it's quarterly, so it's basically on a reimbursement. The salaries of the scientists, the professors that are on the team, are included in their salary. In other words, for the time that they are on the IMST, they don't get paid extra for being on the team. But OSU does bill back to OWEB whatever is budgeted. At one point, the IMST scientific OSU members were on a 33%. That was reduced at the budget reductions. Now it's 0.25%. And that comes out of that OWEB back to OSU, but it's not additional salary to the members. The other members of the team are paid on a contract wage, and they are paid directly, and that is based on an hourly wage. And then there's also breakdown for support staff, rent, and then per diem. And that also gets billed back to OWEB, and that, I believe, is kind of a direct at-cost compensation. In other words, travel expenses is just based on receipts, and then they're reimbursed for that.
Okay. So at the present time, an Oregon State University professor that's on the IMST is getting a 0.25 or one quarter of their salary is paid by OWEB or by the Oregon plan.
Or by the IMST budget. My understanding, yes, Mr.
Yeah.
Chair.
And only three quarters of their salary then is part of the Oregon University system.
Right.
Compensation.
Right.
And we checked that out with the colleges,
yes,
or the universities this morning, and that verifies the rate on the other scientists that are not part of the Oregon University system. And understand, we just happen to have them all from OSU, but they could be from Portland State or the University of Oregon or, you know, some other place like that. But those who are not part of the Oregon University system are compensated on a contracted per dollar amount. That amount currently is $75 an hour.
That's right.
Their next budget is calling for an increase into $80 an hour for that.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Is that and that's a pretty thumbnail sketch of the compensation package.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and also as a footnote, thank you. The 2003-05 budget money that went to the independent multidisciplinary science team came from the Pacific Salmon federal funds that we got. It didn't even, I mean, it was not part of the Measure 66 funding package. This time in the governor's proposed budget, they are looking to take some of the lottery dollars again.
And Sandy, what's the total amount for I just can't remember off the top of my head in the governor's proposed budget.
They have a base budget of $400,000, and there is an option package, in that budget for $547,400 for a total package with the option of $956,000, which basically is what their budget was back in 2001, about $900,000. They were reduced from 02 to now.
And that would be all Measure 66 money?
My understanding is yes.
Including the option package, or is that contingent on if we get adequate federal funds from the Pacific Salmon?
I don't know if that is part of the option package at this point. I do know that it is expectation that it is the option package with that increase is to restore the workload capacity of the team back to pre-03 workloads.
Our purpose for this information is not to do ways and means things here, but so that everyone understands where their money comes from, and there, you know, okay, enough said.
Mr. Chair, just one quick question. For the folks that are on contract on a per-hour basis, about how many hours, I don't know if it's broken down into per week, per month, per year, do they spend on this project? But it's just a curiosity question if you happen to have it there. If not, don't worry about it.
I'm sorry, Representative, but we don't have.
Okay.
It was more my intention just for us to know the format or be clear of the format as far as the pay is concerned.
Thank you.
Because it certainly behoves us to, at every level of this body, to make sure that we're not wasting some money someplace or double dipping in the process.
I appreciate that.
Okay. And then we've got some folks that want to discuss IMST's current processes and procedures. Do y'all want to come up together? We have Chris Jarmer, Katie Fast, and Pat Larson. Welcome to the west side of the state, Pat. Sorry you had to come all the way over here. I mean, too bad we couldn't have taken this to LeGrand.
I agree.
Yeah, Jeanette, that's a problem. Yeah, thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Jensen and members of the committee. For the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. I'm going to take some time to highlight maybe why we're all sitting here and why some attention's been brought on to the IMST from some work that the Water Committee did during the interim, if that is fine, Chair. Okay. During the summer, the IMST released a temperature standard report, and information in that document brought some neglected attention to the IMST, and the neglect, I think, was part on stakeholders from not following some of the work the IMST had been doing, and then neglect from the legislature not having the oversight committee keeping an eye and having annual reports from the IMST.
We established during the summer interim that the legislature would assume the responsibility and all other people are exonerated for whatever. If we had done the oversight the way we should have, we wouldn't have the problems that other people had. So we accept the responsibility for that, and no other apologies are needed from anyone.
Well, thank you. In the temperature document, it was the stakeholders' feeling that the document's recommendations went beyond just science and included policy recommendations as well. Also, we were concerned with statements made by the Department of Rangeland Resources in a report that they found bias in the literature used to support the IMST's documents. And I've included for the committee members a copy of the Rangeland Resources report. It's addressed to Chair Jensen. And our concern is this temperature document will be used to endorse and give scientific credibility to Oregon's temperature standard. And the temperature standard may have financial liabilities to landowners along impaired waterways. And those are the members that the farm industry, the cattle industry, and the forest industry represents.
Katie? I'm going to interrupt you just for a minute to make sure that the clarification for the committee. Can you just explain to the committee who sets the temperature standards? Because I don't think everyone up here is familiar with the TMDL process and who sets the temperature standards and why the IMST was reviewing it.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it might be good background just to mention.
Representative Dingfelder, I will. The temperature standard is set by the Department of Environmental Quality. It's also set in conjunction with the federal EPA or Environmental Protection Agency with their oversight. The temperature report that the IMST did was actually, I believe, requested by the legislature about 2 years ago, and I could be off on the time, but the legislative SR2 committee at the time, Salmon Recovery and Stream Restoration Committee, requested the IMST to do the report. And the temperature standard sets a numeric temperature for Oregon streams. And if the temperature is above that, then it goes on a 303D list for impaired waters, and a TMDL is then done for the waterway. Is that what you were looking for?
Yeah, thank you, Katie. And all those acronyms are in the sheet that was handed out. For those of you who are not familiar with all those acronyms, but it is done through a rulemaking process, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
TMDL is not here, Madam Chair.
It's not. It's total maximum daily load.
So maybe it would be helpful if people would be asked to use the words instead of letters.
If you could.
I will.
I know it's tough. And I understand what these acronyms are, but a lot of people don't work every day with these. So it is done through a rulemaking process, and it is the EQC who adopts those rules, Environmental Quality Commission that adopts those rules. Is that correct?
That is correct. Okay. And the temperature standard was last adopted, I believe, March of last year.
Yeah, that's my understanding. Thank you. And
you're
sorry
welcome.
About the interruption.
So during the interim, the Water Committee, House sub-water committee for agriculture and natural resources had two or three hearings on the IMST, and it brought natural resource organizations, the Department of Rangeland Resources, and the IMST chair to testify and discuss the issues. During the summer, the chair of that committee, Bob Jensen, brought together a work group that consisted of representatives from the forest industry, cattle industry, and farm industry to discuss issues revolving around the IMST. The work group focused on public meeting law and executive sessions, public involvement and contact comment, legislative oversight, recommendations to agencies, peer review, and the locations of meetings. The work group then worked on some recommendations and focused on the IMST's charter. And I'll just briefly highlight some of the recommendations that came out. One of them was to align the IMST's purpose with the enabling statute that you've had a review of, and focus of the work of the IMST to focus on best available science affecting regulatory policy pursuant to the Oregon Plan. And the concern came out again that the IMST should only report their findings and not make policy recommendations to agencies. There were recommendations based on the main meeting spot of the IMST. Previously, quite a few of the meetings had been in Corvallis, and it felt that that was that the IMST needed to get out and travel the state and have meetings where their work would be most significant. There was recommendations to encourage a greater level of public involvement, including public notice of meetings and the removal of closed meetings. Recommendations regarding conflicts of interest and including professional and personal benefits or beliefs to the conflicts of interest. Recommendations revolving around the IMST's works and reports to be reported to the legislative committee as designated in the statutes. And there is also a recommendation from the work group that the legislature should also be involved with the selection of potential projects for the IMST. Recommendations revolving around peer review of the IMST's recommendations. The work group felt that the draft recommendations or draft reports from the IMST should be available for public comment, and also there should be a blind peer review process for the IMST, similar to that that's currently used for publishing in scientific journals. From Farm Bureau's perspective, IMST has made a great effort to increase public awareness of their meetings. Meeting notices are being more broadly distributed, and closed meetings have now been open to the public.
Katie, Madam Chair, may I ask a question?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Katie, I don't think you mentioned the last bullet, which was remove the direction to make policy recommendations to state agencies. And yet, as I read the law, it seems pretty clear that, where did I just see that? The independent multidisciplinary science team submits suggestions to an agency responsible for implementing the Oregon Plan, and the agency shall report in writing. So was this recommendation that it be taken out of the law?
Chair Jensen, Representative Tomei, some of our recommendations possibly went beyond the statutory framework and could possibly be suggestions we have on how the statute should be changed. I will add that it was very strong comments in the work group that any recommendations that come out of the IMST should be science-based and not policy-based. And it was a feeling in the temperature report that there were quite a few policy recommendations being made, not science recommendations made from the IMST.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Madam Mr. Chair.
And we still have some concerns with the IMST and some concerns with the work that they're doing. For one, there is not a joint salmon recovery and stream restoration committee, and we have questions on where the legislative oversight that is directed in the statute, where that will be coming from. It is a key component of not just the IMST, but I'd like to add it's a key component of the success of the Oregon plan in whole. Farm Bureau is concerned with the IMST's recommendations to state agencies, as I stated just now. These recommendations have been policy-directed, which is outside the scientific purpose of the IMST.
Pardon me, would you repeat, please, Kate?
The recommendations have been policy-directed, which is outside the scientific direction or purpose of the IMST. From Farm Bureau's perspective, we would recommend, which is not in the statute, I'll make that clear, that the recommendations should be made to the legislature, because the legislature is the policy body of the state. It also controls the funding mechanisms of state agencies, and it should be in the legislature's purview through the legislative process on what recommendations should be followed out by the state agencies, either through their budgeting process or through statutory direction.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Katie, since I wasn't part of the interim committee and not a part of this, can you give me an example of a recommendation that was made by IMST that was a policy recommendation and not a scientific recommendation?
Yes, Chair Jensen, Representative Tomei. In the temperature report, there were recommendations that the Extension Service should go out, and that's the at Oregon State University, the Extension Service is a tool for landowners to go out and give expertise in different areas, that the Extension Service should be doing workshops on the temperature standard and its credibility, that the Water Resources Department should be promoting in-stream flow, and that the Division of State Lands should enhance their wetlands program.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
just see where I was at. And we're also concerned with the long-term impacts of agencies now receiving recommendations and possibly not implementing these IMST recommendations. And the concern is that setting us up for third-party lawsuits for these recommendations kind of left hanging in the state? And finally, there continues to be unease with the lack of peer review in IMST documents. We would support either draft reports being released for public or agency review and comment before final adoption, or allowing draft reports to receive a blind peer review process. And I'd just like to close by, while there's these issues surrounding the IMST and our concern, if they are not addressed properly, that it will create a lack of credibility for the work that the IMST is doing. And that includes into the COHO report, which I think Chris is going to touch on a little more. So thank you.
Okay. Other questions for Katie?
Mr. Chair, if I may, just very quickly. Thank you. So I don't hear you advocating for example, the question that I asked earlier with regards to has it run its useful life and should it be eliminated, but I hear you saying that there are some things about the IMST that need to be addressed from a standpoint of the content of what they report and where they report it to, and then what's actually done with the information once we, being the legislature, is in possession of it. Am I understanding you correctly?
Chair Jensen, Representative Krummel, that is correct. If we're going to have scientific review of the Oregon plan, then it needs to be a scientific review. And the concern now is that the IMST is taking on a whole new direction and is setting their own course with policy recommendations that go outside of the framework that they were set up in. And that's our main concern.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Good afternoon. Pat, are you next on the
yes.
agenda?
I'm Pat Larson. I'm the Science and Natural Resource Advisor for the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. I have some copies of my testimony and background material that we covered and submitted to the subcommittee this summer. Thank you for providing us this time once again. We submitted written comments in August 2004. That detail some of our concerns about the IMST temperature report and are providing a copy to you once again today. The literature review was prepared for the Oregon Cattlemen Association on behalf of them and was has been sent to the Oregon State Range Department as well as Chairman Jensen. The review provided by the IMST and the temperature report was pulled from a variety of sources and was not a review of the best available science, and we have noted the areas where we have serious disagreements with the narrative. Thank you. The statute directs the IMST to serve as an independent scientific peer review panel to the state agencies responsible for developing and implementing the Oregon Plan and other salmon or stream enhancement programs throughout the state. The statute does not assign the IMST the task of designing a research project and becoming involved in the collection of data or participate in lab or field work. The team has been directed to review pertinent literature that provides a scientific framework about what we know and what we don't know regarding certain scientific issues as they pertain to the implementation of the Oregon Plan. The independence of the IMST was intended to allow the members freedom from interference that could be politically motivated, but was not inserted as a means for them to work in isolation. Oregon wanted to have the best literature identified by scientists who understand the scientific methods and are familiar with the scientific jargon. The IMST represents seven individuals out of the science community in Oregon who have agreed to serve the state for a period of time. Each member is selected as representing a discipline to provide a broad spectrum of expertise. Each agrees to serve not knowing what issue they will be asked to examine. The statute in no way anoints the team as Oregon's elite intellectual scientific think tank. The team is instead is an humble group of scientists who are willing to serve a four-year term as reviewers of existing scientific work. The IMST has the freedom to discuss ideas and consider the work of other scientists who have met and passed the test of peer review through publication in an appropriate professional scientific journal. The intent of the statute is not a license for the team members to cherry-pick literature or provide a laundry list of opinions expressed in every kind of document ever printed. The hope has always been to find solutions based on solid principles established through practical experimentation and structured science. Science theories are testable with data and statistical proofs and can only be enhanced through vigorous discussions because often new ideas are brought out that strengthen the methods used to study an issue. As scientists, the IMST members should relish debates as a way to probe nature's understanding of the laws of nature and to engage the public to become participants rather than bystanders. We offer the following. The IMST charter should be rewritten to incorporate a process that promotes public comment on their work. This step could be useful to the team in obtaining pertinent literature and information relative to the topic being reviewed. The charter should reference the public meeting laws and acknowledge the importance of making meetings accessible across the state. The charter should also address the provisions for including minority reports where scientific disagreements between team members exist regarding agency action. The MST charter should include provisions and steps that will ensure the team's reports are free of bias, are objective, and reflect a high level of accuracy in narrating what the researchers measured tested and interpreted from the data. The IMST report should avoid reinterpreting study results outside of the published. The IMST temperature report should be edited using rigorous criteria to separate science, water science, from publications about fish physiology. The theories of heating and cooling should be placed in a section within the report where the most relevant data is discussed that provides guidance toward proven methods for use by state agencies when making stream temperature assessments. Then the report should provide a section for the science that deals with fish tolerances observed in Oregon streams. In its current format, the report confuses these two types of scientific research and takes great liberty in interpreting unrelated studies outside of the supporting data. As a result, the report has inserted new conflicts into many OWEB-funded cooperative projects by pitting the state philosophy against the ground evidence. The IMST report has also put many Eastern Oregon agriculture producers at risk of violating 1010 rules in their basins because the state only allows computer modeling of stream temperatures and does not support statistical testing to validate whether a stream can or cannot achieve the 64-degree standard. The heat source model needs to be field tested. We testified on that this summer, and I've restated that. Even though the IMST has made a decision to avoid the task of editing the temperature report, we think it clouds the work facing the team in the Eastern Oregon project. The IMST charter should have provisions that allow the team to reassess previous work and make needed corrections when necessary. And finally, we do not agree with recommendations the IMST has for agency actions. The IMST should review the science literature and offer advice about which studies present information that will be useful in the agency work. This will leave the agencies free to seek clarification about science principles or engage in a discussion of ideas with the IMST where monitoring results in Oregon are in conflict with literature. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Any questions? I think we owe Pat a thanks for the second time coming over to, in the last year to talk to us about this. We do appreciate your coming over. We appreciate the work that you've done and the guidance that you give us on this. And I don't have any questions at this time, so we'll move on then.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Very well stated.
Go ahead, thanks.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Chris Jarmer. I work for the Oregon Forest Industries Council here in Salem. I don't have any written testimony for you today. I think there's probably enough paper circulating on this topic. My task, I think, is to build on what Katie and Pat have said and maybe provide a few examples that might add some context to what we're discussing and why we're discussing it. I think we can all agree that science is a pretty critical part of the public policy process. The agreement kind of starts falling apart at that point when we try to define what is science and what is policy and defining a nice clear line between those two things. And that's pretty much where I think we're at today, is where that science ends and where the policy piece picks up. So, I'd like to say, at this point, too, that separating those two is very difficult. And when you have data and you're trying to interpret the data, it's a very tough thing to keep yourself from moving on into the policy development phase. And so I just want to recognize that I believe that's true. In an example in my world, in the forestry world, we've got a lot of experimental data from harvested streams in the headwater regions, which is near the top of where the streams initiate flow. There's a study that we have, and I don't have the numbers exact, but several of the streams, say 5 out of 10, warm up as they go downhill. 3 of the streams actually cool down as they go downhill, and 2 of them remain about the same. So the next question that you ask is very critical. Some people would ask, do we need to change our forestry practices to avoid 5 of the streams warming up after that harvest? And I would submit that that's the wrong question. The right question is, what happened prior to harvest? And if we do that kind of investigation, we find that, in fact, 5 of those 10 warmed up prior to harvest as well as after harvest. And so our question, when we have that kind of data in front of us, is quite different than if we just have the first set of data. And so I think what we find from that example is that the data is always, well, I won't say it's always not enough, but it's always open to interpretation, and sometimes more data is way better. But where do you stop? When do you say that we have enough data? And that's a difficult question to answer.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chris, how did you measure what the temperature of the stream was before the harvest? The harvest has already happened, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, there are study designs out there that actually predict when the harvest will occur, say 1999, and they'll start measuring temperature data in 1997. So we'll have data in 97, 98.
Great, got it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So moving on, I think that's why the framing of the question is a very critical piece, and that's where I think we can help the IMST do better work here. Asking the right question the right way is critical to having a report or an experimental design that's going to give you the right information that you need to make decisions. I'd like to follow up on Katie's example of the temperature report. The question that was posed by the legislature several years ago was, is the water temperature standard scientifically credible? It was a fairly simple question in my mind and fairly direct. And the IMST concluded that indeed that it was scientifically credible. We could argue whether that's the right answer or not, but the next question that the IMST asked itself was a question that I would disagree with, which is, okay, so what does that mean? The question I would have put to the IMST is, are there other water temperature standards that are equally scientifically credible? Are there different ways that we could construct a temperature standard that would be just as effective as the one that we've got in front of us, and perhaps trade those off? But we didn't get the chance to ask that question because the IMST process is very ordered. Once they get going, they get their information, they get their work done, and they produce their report. And once the report is done, it's the wrong time to go back and ask a different kind of question. So that's just another example of the way I feel that we could help the IMST is, as they've stated, a more open process in the initial stages that helps them get to the right questions. So I'd like to reiterate the chair's reference to the importance of the COHO report to the state of Oregon. I was going to make that point, but he's already done that. What I would say is the science is never perfect, and
the chair would always welcome your comments, even if I've said something about it. So and appreciate them as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was simply going to say that I thought it was important, and I believe that you used the same word. So thought. I would just reiterate that. What I've discovered by reading the drafts of the reports at ODFNW, Department of Fish and Wildlife, I probably didn't need to do that one for you, that Fish and Wildlife have done is that they're good. They're excellent work. And I think the state of Oregon can be proud of the work that their agency has done. But the science isn't perfect. So therefore, there can be criticisms leveled against the reports. But how those criticisms are constructed and what context they're brought to the overall report are very important. And they could be done in a very constructive manner and still be critical of the science that's contained in the reports. And finally, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to make a comment on Brendan's earlier comments. I was struck by it, and he said it three times. He said what we wanted to ask the IMST was whether the Oregon plan was working or not. And it was, well, is it working or not? And we never get that in natural resources. We get the answer is always, well, maybe. And that's a very dissatisfying answer most of the time. And the question always comes to you as policymakers. Okay, it's not working as well as it could be. How much will it cost? What are the ramifications of making it more effective? And I think that's where we're at with the IMST. What can we do to make them more effective? And that's, I believe, what you have before you. So with that, I'd finish in answering questions.
I think maybe that's your last comment, is the liability of a science report. Because few scientists, I guess, really want to go out on a limb and say that A equals B sort of thing. That, you know, they will always... They're probably the early politicians. They should always qualify their positions based on. I would make a couple of comments. I think you hit on and emphasized an extremely important point as far as science is concerned, and that is that the answers you get will depend upon the questions you ask. Whatever it is, your research is going to be basically tailored according to those questions. And we get all sorts of conflicting answers. And members, this is a committee that since its inception, at least in the SR2 period, that has dealt exclusively, I think, with conflicting science. I don't find that personally to be a problem. I don't find that at all to be contradictory, because that in fact is what science really is and what it probably really should be until we reach that lofty status of having achieved some sort of a law of science, and they are few and far between. So until we get there, we're always going to have some conflict. And in this committee and other places, I have at various times used the illustration of light. There are two theories of light. One is a wavelength theory, one is a particle theory. Both contradict each other. Both work. I think we can find, other examples of this type. I'm going to have to back away from this. I'm going to get into a lecture on the philosophy of science in a minute if I'm not careful, and in the process I'm going to bore everyone in the house but the chair, and that's not going to be productive. So, with that, do you have then any questions for Chris that you might
Mr.
Representative Dingfelder?
I shouldn't let him get off easy because Chris used to be my boss as well at the Tualatin Watershed Council, so they're coming back to haunt me. But
payback.
But Chris, I'd like to reflect on something the chair has stated. I mean, our role is to make policy decisions, and we are facing, as if you probably heard it, we've had some very heated debates about fluoride and fluoridation, and we have heard incredible amounts of information on both sides of the issue. And I've had many people contact me about this issue, and some people feel that we should not be making this decision because we are not scientists. Very few people in this body have a science background. And so I guess it's more of an observation, and I'd like to get your opinion. I mean, we are asked as policymakers to make decisions all the time on science, as at the local level as well, as you know, oftentimes. And you were very involved in the TMDL process for the Tualatin, as I was as well. So I guess it's always, that's part of our job, is to look and weigh the different sides of an issue. And I think that saying that the IMST, I don't have a problem, with the IMST information as long as I understand this is one viewpoint, just like, when you review other aspects. And as Representative Chomet pointed out, that part of their job is to advise the state agencies, our job is to set the policy. And I feel that so far, I think the information they've given on the Oregon plan has been helpful. But you've been involved with the temperature standard for a long time, and I know that. Do you feel that the policies that have been set have been influenced a lot by the IMST? I'm just curious because I feel like I weigh that IMST information just as much as I would weigh information from other scientists. So do you feel it's particularly biased compared to other
scientific information. I mean, I don't find that as policymakers, so I'm just curious, in your experience working on a lot of different reports, and you've been doing this for, what, 25?
Well, I'm not there. Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, I appreciate the question, and it is, I mean, I think it's the heart of what I was trying to express here. When does the data reporting function stop, and when does the policy advocacy begin in anything? And it is very difficult to find that middle line where you're completely devoid of any policy influence, but you've given enough data to make a policy leader as yourself, giving useful information so that they can find a way to make the correct policy. So I'm admitting that it's a hard line to think. As far as my personal opinion on the temperature report, I think they came to a sound conclusion on Part A, but I think that was all that they were asked to do by the legislature. Had they then come back and said, well, okay, that's our answer for Part A, here's what we think Part B should be and Part C beyond that, you would have had the opportunity to say, well, I don't think that's where we should go. What we should do, given your answer to Part A, is this. And it might have taken them in the same direction. It might have taken them in a different direction. In my personal opinion, it clearly was the wrong direction to go. After having sat through the EPA water standard setting process that preceded the state's process, it was very frustrating to see people completely closed to the idea of a standard that had a range of temperatures. And no one ever gave me a satisfactory reason why they were opposed to that, other than it would be complicated. And my retort to that always was, well, the system is very complicated. Shouldn't we have a standard that mirrors the system so that we can, you know, really know when we're out of balance versus when we're in balance? So in my opinion, I would have gone a different way with the report. And that's how I would respond to your question.
Okay. I appreciate that, Chris. Thank you.
Without talking to the IMST per se on that, probably important to note that this was one of the reports that they constructed complements of a question coming from the policymakers. I think it was Senator Farioli and Senator Messerly, or maybe it was Representative Messerly at the time, that advanced that particular question to them. And not having been a party to that, I don't know, they may have framed the question in not necessarily the best way that they might have, you know, with it. So one of the things one additional thing I want to comment on, and the lady in the back with IMST will vouch for this. I have, from practically the very beginning, been a critic of no minority reports. That's, you know, it's impossible for me to pick on the temperature standard. Since that's already been introduced, you know, here today as one of the subjects that they, it's impossible for me, even if I knew nothing about it, to think that there wouldn't be a conflicting science on something like this. Even though they are reviewing the literature and not conducting original research on this, I would think, and I have told them this, that the report should contain a minority report, or should contain the other side of the picture, that it should say that this is the conclusions that this body of literature reaches, but there's another body of literature, credible or uncredible, call it, you know, whatever you want, leave it up to the reader to make that determination. There's another body of literature that takes a slightly different or dramatically different approach to it. As a policymaker, that makes life easier for me. I'm not sure how it makes it for other people in making the policy, but it makes life easier for me than reading something and having to scratch my head and wonder why some other things haven't been, you know, necessarily addressed. And I, you know, in fairness, I've talked to IMST about this. I think that can be, you know, verified. I think they will tell you that I've been a critic, you know, on that. And I think they are probably probably listening and going to be doing some more, you know, in that regard in future activities or future reports that that they have. We don't have the IMST here for two reasons. One, as you can tell, we have occupied the biggest part of our allotted time without having them here. And two, Chris, right now, as far as I'm concerned, the number one thing I want IMST to do is to get the verification of the science that the department is using out so that we can move forward on this coastal coho issue. And time is of the essence on that, so that's the reason we haven't asked them to be with us today. And while I will try to schedule at some time in the future a meeting with IMST on this and talk in, you know, some more about some of the issues, it is simply that I've elected to arbitrarily make the decision that their other job is more important right now than talking to me. And so with that, if there's no other editorial or questions from the
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to note that we've scared off all the other committee members except for your co-chair and and our newest member. So
my faithful. They are my faithful. They've been with me from practically day one on this, and I am really flattered that they're still here.
No, but seriously, this is since I was there for all the interim discussions, I'm sure we will continue to have discussions, and I think it would be good to bring some of the IMST members back, especially for some of the committee members who did not have the advantage of hearing the discussions from the summer.
That's very true. And I appreciate you plowing the same field that you went over this summer.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Oops, I'm supposed to bang the gavel. All right, we're adjourned.